So hi, I'm Abhishek, and I'll be presenting on designing low-power native and web apps with Harita. So we have been working on performance and power optimizations for mobile devices for quite some time, and like this presentation is based on our experiences with the past projects and like specifically on the power side and like based on examples from like some of the actual work that we did and which helped us saving power. So before I get started, like I would like to acknowledge Will for all his help with the browser analysis that's part of this work, Ross and Tom from OTC for their help with Tizen architecture, and then Tom, Fernando, Raji, and Yamini for like reviewing and sending in good comments for that helped make the presentation better. Okay, so we already know that power is an important aspect in any mobile device today. I mean, it is one of the critical factors that decides the success of any particular mobile device. And software is a big part of that power onus. A lot of things that can be done in software can help reducing power of any device, and it can make or break the success of a device. So the figure on the right here shows like different layers of any particular mobile device that we have today, and each layer has different features that they support for lower power. For example, like at hardware, there are features like clock gating, power gating, and different type of sleep states that are there in the devices. Then there are different type of features in the OS, like for example, frequency governors, and there is a whole power management setup. At the drivers and middleware levels as well, there is a lot of support for getting low power into the devices. For example, like there is a whole framework for a device level power management where you can like make the device go into deeper sleep states, and so on and so forth. And then, of course, like at the topmost level of the stack, where there are native and web apps, like they are the ones who actually use all the features of the device and give a good user experience to the user. And at the same time, they need to make sure that they are using the resources properly for lower power. So the biggest onus, I would say, based on the past experiences, that like most of the onus lies with the apps that run on the system, and a single bad app can actually cause a lot of trouble in terms of making the device meet its power budget. And although the hardware and OS and different type of drivers provide several features, it's up to the application to use them judiciously and efficiently in order to make the best out of the device. And in this presentation, what we'll do is try to give a little bit of an idea of like what all things are there in the hardware or what all considerations like a person can make in order to have a very efficient and low power app. So the agenda looks somewhat like this. I'll talk a little bit about the power tools and metrics that are usually used for optimizing for power. Some generic tips for low power applications. So the tips that will be showing today are based on like real life examples on actual apps which are working on devices. The third topic would be like providing some very generic guidelines of what should like some do's and don'ts on like what one should keep in mind when designing an app. And then I will be very happy to take your questions if you have any at that point. Okay, so getting started, there are several metrics that you can use to estimate the power of any particular device. So of course, like for power measurements, the best way to go about it is to actually hook up the device to a power meter or a data acquisition system and measure power. But that kind of facility is not available to each and every company, each and every developer. So there needs to be an alternative to estimating power, And like there are several metrics that can be associated with power. Some of them are listed here. So like CPU utilization and memory bandwidth are a couple of the most important features that can give you an estimate of how the power should look like. For example, if you have 100% CPU utilization, you're going to have high power. That's pretty obvious. But then there are a lot of other subtle things that you can measure and which can give you a very good idea of like if your power is good, if your power is bad, or like any change in the code that you do, if it makes sense in terms of power. So those go by like those depend on the CPU C states as well as P states. And then like at the device level, there are D states. So like CPU has different power states, C0 being the most active state, and depending on the particular processor that you're using, it would have a deepest sleep state where like it is consuming next to zero power. And then like based on your application, the CPU keeps switching. Like there are governors which keep switching the CPU between one of these states. And then based on that, your power consumption of the CPU would get decided. And similar thing for for each independent device, like a GPU or a video decoder or anything for that matter. And then there are things like wake-ups and interrupts, which bring the system out of their sleep states, and they cause a lot of power consumption as well, because like they effectively bring your system into active state again and cause them to consume high power. So there are several tools available for getting these metrics, and like if you make any changes to your code, what you can do is you can run one of these tools and try to figure if that particular code change or that particular implementation is good in terms of power or not. So Intel has a product, like a full product called VTune, which has a power analyzer feature that you can always use for all of the metrics that I just described in the last slide. But then there are other generic Linux tools which can be used in conjunction or like independently of VTune, and that can help you estimate the power consumption of your device. So for example, like Perf and Top and PowerTop, these are some of the tools which can give you like different aspects of like your CPU cycle consumption or your C state utilization and things like that. The other important tool that we recently came across and that we found very helpful in our in the analysis that we did on web applications is called the Chrome browser's inherent tracing tool. That gives you a lot of details about how the application looks like and what are the different calls that an application make and their timing, their latencies, and how it, and you can try to estimate from there like how it may impact your power budget. Okay. So moving on to tips, the first one is like minimize wake-ups. They are really, really expensive in terms of power. So by wake-ups, we mean like each, as I mentioned before, like each device and even the CPU has a deep sleep state. And when you wake up the device from its sleep state, it is going to consume power. So the job as a power optimization person would be, or like it would be there for any developer as well, would be to try and minimize the number of wake-ups that are there from a system. Primary reason for wake-ups can be like if you're trying to do frequent I/O on any particular device, or you have really very high frequency timers, or if you're trying to access data from any particular sensor, or like trying to download something from the net very frequently, then it would cause the system to wake up and consume power. So a real-life example of an application which is causing like a different number of wake-ups and its impact on the SoC power. So as we see here, like as we go on the higher side of the wake-ups, like when we talk about a huge number of wake-ups, like for example, 50-plus or 100-plus wake-ups, it means like the CPU is active all the time. I mean, like, it doesn't, like, when you're talking about 100 wake-ups, that's, like, one wake-up every 10 milliseconds. So if there is like if the CPU has a latency of going to sleep of say 20 or 50 milliseconds, then essentially what you're doing is not allowing the CPU to go to sleep at all. And that would essentially keep the CPU active all the time and at its maximum power number. And so you will see this power number until you go below a threshold where the CPU actually starts going to sleep. And as we can see, that threshold in this case like is crossing at 80 wakes a second or something. So like once you have your wake-up number below this particular level, then at least you start seeing an impact of your optimizations on the system power. Before this, like even if you say reduce your wake-ups from 1,000 to 100, you won't see a difference. So the point I'm trying to make here is you need to have the wake-ups from your application to be at a really, really low number in order to make an impact on the system power. Okay, and like so again, like, and this is like just for one app. So if you have like 20 or like in current devices, there are 20 or 30 or 50 apps running at the same time. So wake-ups from each of them would add up, and that can really cause the system to be active all the time. So looking at the same example from a different perspective, here we've plotted battery life along with the number of wake-ups on another example. And as we see, like as soon as the wake-ups start going below a threshold, you can see significant improvement in terms of the overall system's battery life. So for example, here like we started with 168 wake-ups on one system, and the battery life came out to be around 20 or I guess 18 hours. And then when we reduced the number of wake-ups to 8, the battery life went up to around 150 hours. So that is like a tenfold improvement in battery life. So and then like the wake-ups were because of like some of the optimizations that we did were like related to apps which were like trying to pull a particular sensor or a particular a memory space pretty frequently. And like some of the other apps had like a lot of frequent timers which were causing like maybe writing to a disk or checking the status of some register or something like that, which was causing the system to wake up. So, and then of course, like if you generally have a complex code which runs all the time, then you would have a lot of background activity and you would end up causing the CPU to do work for you and consume power. So software hygiene is a very important thing to keep in mind. When your application is idle, when nobody is using it, you should really keep it clean and not cause any CPU activity or memory activity to get the best possible power numbers. Okay, so bottom line, avoid polling, avoid timers, avoid any frequent I/O, and try to maximize, try to batch requests. For example, if you have to write data to the memory, try to coalesce it or batch it together and do it in one go, and then let the CPU go to sleep for a longer time rather than doing it over short periods of small jobs. And like this is practically applicable to a lot of different applications. For example, like if your application is trying to access any particular sensor, or if you're trying to use any of the memory I/O things, then try to use that in a non-polling fashion. And then, of course, like there are some common common things like using push notifications instead of polling data every now and then from any particular device. Okay, so moving on to the next step, use hardware acceleration. I bet everybody knows about it. We wanted to keep this here just to put it in perspective on how important it is, and like the amount of power savings that you can get by actually using hardware acceleration at all the places that where it is applicable. So on a system, there would be a bunch of different avenues for hardware acceleration. Like most of the SoCs today have like dedicated video engines, audio engines, and Of course, the GPU is there, which can be used for a lot of acceleration work. So try to make use of them as much as possible. So like three examples here on the same hardware acceleration thing. The first one, the two bars on the left are about video playback, where we do the overlay or the rendering part in software versus hardware. And you see like the CPU the active CPU time went down from around 60% to 10% or so. And that helped reducing the power as well quite a lot. Similar thing on an audio app where the decoding was being done in hardware, and then we moved it to software, and it actually helped saving quite a lot of power. And similar thing for an HTML5 based video web app, where enabling the compositing thing in hardware versus software actually helped saving quite a lot of power, because you get the same amount of the same job done in much less amount of time, and you can go for a deeper sleep. You can shoot for a deeper sleep state. So you see, in the third case, the power is still high, because in this case, the decoding is still done in software compared to hardware. So if you have hardware acceleration enabled for software, that would even further reduce. Further reduce the power. Some caveats that you need to keep in mind for hardware acceleration is the benefits from it can vary, and it can vary a lot. So depending on your application, you need to make a judicious choice of if you want to actually go for hardware acceleration. So it makes sense only if you can do the same work in on the accelerator in a lesser time. And since with hardware acceleration, you have to actually copy the data to your accelerator before actually doing any processing. So the more the number of mem copies, the higher your memory power will be. So you need to make sure that you are doing a good trade-off in terms of offloading and doing stuff on the CPU. And there are a bunch of hardware acceleration possibilities in Tizen as well. For example, for video, there are multiple formats that are supported. Similar thing for audio. So if you have an app which does any background music or it has videos and stuff, then try to make them in a format which is inherently supported by the operating system for hardware acceleration. So if you have a choice of MP3 versus a any other format, and if you have the same clip in MP3, it would have much less power. So that's what you should be shooting for. And this is, again, this tip is applicable to all the media apps, to games, and to any of the web apps which actually use some of the HTML5 canvas and other hardware accelerated tags. So try to make use of them as much as possible in order to get the best power numbers. Okay, I'll hand it over to Harita from here.
Thanks, Abhishek. Okay, so with tip three, what we have is don't shoot for performance beyond what a user can perceive. So what we mean by this is don't try to focus on unnecessary or unneeded performance, because it always comes with power overhead. So always try to make a trade-off between performance and power. To show the performance and power trade-off, what we did was we took an example of video playback with a different video clip rates, starting from 15 FPS to 60 FPS, and we analyzed the CPU percentage, CPU utilization, and then power, and then also performance. Now, visually, when you compare a 30 FPS clip, visually, when you compare the 30 FPS clip with 45 FPS clip or 60 FPS clip, we did not see a huge change in it. It's rarely perceivable. But however, when you compare the CPU utilization or the power, you almost see a huge impact on this side. So from the data that we have, you can see that the power almost increases from 2.5 times from 30 FPS to 60 FPS. And then, so in efforts to maximize your performance, always keep an eye on power. And you can then probably make an appropriate decision on picking the right resources to balance this trade-off. And then who should note this? Usually for media applications, as I mentioned again, videos are very beyond 30 FPS clips are rarely perceivable on mobile devices. So you should make a good choice on it. But when it comes to audio playback, there are two things that you need to keep in mind is what are the bit rates that you are looking at for audio clips, as well as the sampling rates. Because if your sampling rates are different, your audio middleware is going to spend a lot of time in converting those sampling rates, and then it has to do extra work for resampling. And then you also need to make sure that depending upon your output hardware capacity, what type of bit rate you're using. And then also make sure that you do not process frame rates beyond what screen refresh rate is. So you should basically understand what are your screen refresh rates and then pick appropriate clips or resources. Okay. So moving on to applications that does a lot of network activity or uses web technologies, keep in mind that these activities also has a lot of impact on the overall system power. So what we did here was we analyzed two different applications, two different search applications. We picked Google Search and Ask Search, and we analyzed the overall behavior of the SoC power over time. So on this graph, you can see that the purple line actually represents Google Search, and the blue line is the Ask Search. And so as soon as we search for a word, there's a GET request being sent to the server, and then on Google, we start receiving the data after 138 milliseconds. However, for Ask, after it takes almost 1.2 seconds to start receiving the data back. So you see that the wider power block is because of the server latency response time, and there's almost 10% difference in between these two applications, 10% power difference between these two applications. So due to this huge difference in the server response latency time, this is one of the major factors why you see so much a huge difference between these two search. So analyzing further, what we understood was once you start receiving the data back, the CPU starts parsing and it spends a lot of time in JavaScript on Ask Search, and simultaneously it also issues a lot of requests to different domains. And because Ask does all these activities, you see a bigger power spike even after receiving the search results. And then when you're doing a lot of parsing, a lot of JavaScripts, you see a high memory, high power in memory as well as high power in CPU. And looking at the CPU profiles too, we saw that Google spends extremely less time in doing a lot of JavaScript, whereas Ask did a lot of time, spent a lot of time in the JavaScript execution. So another thing to notice is what Google did was they cached a lot of images and data on their server, and whereas Ask did not. They did some, but not all of them. So it tried to download the data and the images from various domain surveys. So when you're trying to, those domains would in turn have higher latency to download those images or data. So that's why you see a huge difference between after receiving the data, you still see a high power on Ask. And then further, if you look at the Google line, you can see that after the search results, it pretty much is very clean and it goes back to idle. Whereas for Ask, you still see a lot of spikes going on, which again contributes to the overall high system power. So what Ask is doing is, even on the after receiving the data, is basically receiving more data and doing a lot of parsing. So that's some of the major differences we saw. So some of the things to note from this tip is, what you can basically do is you can batch a lot of requests, and Ask does that, but not all of them. So some of the good things you can note is probably batch a lot of operations together. You can also cache external resources, and try to avoid doing many sequential connections to access data from different multiple servers or things like that. And then all the people who are trying to work on web applications should probably know some of these tips. Okay, so moving on to tip five, here I'm going to talk more about on how to minimize your communication power. So I'll take the same example, and let's take at the Wi-Fi power, how it looks. So with the same example, you also see that due to the difference in the server response latencies causes the wider power block on Ask Wi-Fi compared to the Google Wi-Fi. And then, so basically, the more data you're going to request, that means the more high power you're going to see. And these wider power blocks actually indicates that, whereas you there's this one narrow spike on Ask, and that's basically Wi-Fi just waking up from idle and just scanning for something and again going back to sleep. Okay, so how you can avoid higher latencies and things like that, how you can minimize the Wi-Fi power is, what you can do is you can reduce the network latency by probably using some of the CDNs, the content distribution networks, use them, and you can cache a lot of data on your web servers rather than spending a lot of time fetching them from different domains or the servers, and try to avoid fetching data from multiple servers. So now moving on to some of the general guidelines that we wanted to talk was about your application needs to be context aware. That means it should be pretty smart enough to understand its current state depending upon the user inputs, and then try to minimize the system resources, try to minimize using the system resources when probably it's not in foreground or things like that, maybe by subscribing to different system events or screen events. And then try to free up a lot of temporary cache files and images when it's not in use. Another thing, very important thing actually to notice is, whenever your application is idle, when you don't have any user inputs or things like that, make sure that your application is idle, almost matching to the system idle. And you can also defer a lot of tasks by grouping them together or finish them when you get a system wake up next time. So so moving on to summary, try to remember that power is really an important factor that you should always keep in mind when you're designing an application from the start of the day when you're starting to develop an application. And hope you enjoy developing your application by keeping these in mind. And these were some of the tips that we had that we wanted to share with you all today. And hope you learned something, and you're going to apply the same to your applications. Thanks. Hope you enjoyed your presentation. Do you guys have any questions?
What are the real-life apps you were referring to throughout your presentation?
Okay. So the Google search and Ask search was something real. For web apps, we used HTML5 video streaming. Pretty much.
And we also analyzed CPU utilization of some of the existing mobile version of different web pages to see how their resource utilization looks like, and like if they have any backups or if they're causing or consuming any system resources when nobody's using them.
Are you continuing investigating? Is there a next step to things you want to analyze further?
Next steps? Yeah, pretty much.
So
on
as a developer, maybe to have a more fine grain to, you know, how does my style sheet layout affect power performance if I have multiple style sheets being loaded or multiple pages or,
true.
You know, if I have a designer that specifies tons of color changes and gradients and, you know, WebKit transforms or animations, how those affect
those
power,
affect, yeah,
that
yeah.
would be useful to know.
Yeah, there's such a wide range of things that actually go into this. So yeah, definitely our major focus is to try to do more and more power and performance optimizations too.
So the other thing is like sometimes what happens is, I mean, if your code is too complex, it becomes very difficult to figure what part of code is causing power. I mean, so the best way to go about it is to try using some of these tools and first analyze the basic things. I mean, like, is it because of memory? Is it because of wake-ups? Or is it just because it's doing a lot of I/O? And then, like, maybe some, like, vTune, for example, would tell you what particular operation is causing memory I/O. So
or CPU power.
Or CPU
instructions, yeah.
Hotspots, things like that. So go from there rather than, like, so I guess it's more of a bottom-up thing than a top-down. Because, like, I can't think of any way like of estimating power of a style sheet, for example, I mean, other than like going back to the basics and trying to figure out from there.
Yeah.
You mentioned doing some tracing with the Chrome Inspector tools, and I was just wondering what were you doing? I mean, I know they have a timeline of network events with latency.
Right, right.
And then the profiler, was it one or the other of those?
So I personally like that tool a lot. That's because it does precise timelining. It gives you exactly what's happening in the timeline. And then you could take a look at the network activity. It will give you all the information of what exactly it's downloading or what type of data it's downloading, maybe an image or maybe any other file. And apart from network timeline, there's something called CPU profile that you can look at. And basically, it will tell you what JavaScript code or file, or even it will take you down to the function and the line name if you take a look at the CPU profiles. So these three things were majority of where we came out with our analysis and everything.
So what did you, from the profiling data, what conclusions, how do you use that to draw conclusions about the power usage?
So, like one thing is, of course, the like. So we have a system which can do component level power, so we can figure out like how much the CPU power is and how much Wi-Fi power is and things like that. So, like based on like if there are huge long latency network calls, and if we profile or actually measure the Wi-Fi power, we can see like a graph which we showed in one of our examples where like we were having a bigger power block compared to a smaller one. And so we can go from there, and like I guess from the Chrome tracing tool, you can map it down to a particular network call that was causing it. So I guess you can figure out that this particular network server is causing higher latency. And so try to debug it from there. I mean, like. As such, from there are good apps and bad apps on both. I mean, so there can be really good web apps, there can be really good native apps, and then there are bad versions of both of them as well. So, like, so I guess like as such, from the web runtime perspective, there was nothing that we found. I mean, like in terms of the basic framework itself, that was a power issue by itself. So, for example, the Google example we took, the Google search. I mean, like when when the search subsides, I mean, like as soon as the search results are out, it pretty much matches a very ideal profile. I mean, so there is no other wake up. Although the application is still running, it's still idle.
Matches to the native application completely.
Right. Not independently, but I guess it would tie down to the number of wake-ups again.
Yeah, not specifically, not a specific application with the push notifications. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you so much.